This episode of A Waste of Time with It's The Real is brought to you by CISO. CISO is on-demand, 24/7 streaming comedy anytime, anywhere, curated for the comedy connoisseur. Visit CISO.com and CISO for yourself. Try it now for free.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing great. Another great week for It's The Real.
It's always a great week. How could it not be a great week?
Well, I'll tell you how this was an extra great week. MTV had their upfronts, and they shouted us out as a project that's heavily in development, and advertisers are really excited for it, and they showed a video with us. And
yeah, it's a video. We are a project that they care about, which is nice to hear.
It is very nice, so shouts to us. This is a very busy week. We've been doing a million projects, but it's nice to see that we have this big presentation, and then we're a part of it. In addition, we did go down to Washington, D.C. for Passover.
And Passover, I would say, is one of the less fun holidays. Like, it's not like a holiday that you're just like, oh, man, it's Passover.
Well, I do look forward to seeing our cousins. There's some traditions that are nice.
Yeah,
you know?
Like, it's nice to see family or whatever. But, yeah. Like, you know, the food is whatever. And not being able to eat bread is a bummer.
Yeah, not the best. So the way the Passover works is that there's the adult table and then there's the kids table. And the kids table for many, many years has been generally the same. It's us, it's our cousins, and it's our like family friends. And there's one family friend who she lives in LA, but she's been there basically every year for the last 25 years, let's say. And this year she shows up, she walks in and she's smiling at us and we give her a hug and we say, how you doing? How you been? We see her boyfriend. And then we sit down for the Seder and you look over and something is not right.
Her tooth is gone.
One of her two front teeth is just not there. And there's zero explanation. There is one tooth and there was just a million different things running through my head.
I was sitting right next to her. I had to take my glasses off because it was in too sharp focus, and I'm bad at like keeping a straight face.
I don't understand why there was no explanation in the first place. We went through the entire Seder. We went through everyone takes turns speaking.
Yeah, it's so, like 4 hours of me staring at her empty mouth.
She was delicately like eating stuff during the dinner portion. She sat there and laughed at things.
At a certain point, we should have been like, yo, where's your tooth at?
It was crazy. It was wild. And then we had to hold this in because it's not like we could say anything across the table or like, you know, give some sort of hint or anything.
What, me and you?
Yeah, or any of us.
I should have pointed my mouth and been like...
Everybody at the table was just wondering what was going on besides her and her boyfriend.
How many teeth do you have?
Or maybe her boyfriend did have a problem with it. I have no idea. It was just so strange.
Yeah, I almost want to talk to him more than I want to talk to her about it.
And then at the end, once the door closed to the apartment and they had left, we ran up to our mom and our cousin and our cousin's fiance, and we're just like, what was that? Where has this tooth been? Where did it go? So many questions.
So many questions. I it's really only one question.
What's that?
Where's the tooth?
Where is your tooth? Hashtag, where is your tooth?
Actually, second question. Follow up. Why is no one making a big deal about this? Meaning you.
Actually,
meaning
so
you, girl.
Yeah, there's four questions. This is like all four.
Yeah.
Today's guest on A Waste of Time with It's The Real is Kamaya from Oakland. She's a young up-and-coming rapper who has a great project called...
A Good Night in the Ghetto. It is so good.
It's all we've been listening to for a while. It's G-Funk.
It's melodic, great samples. It's so good.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
It's really cool. It's honest. It's great storytelling.
And it's so catchy.
It's really cool. So Kamaya is our guest today. But before we get into that, Prince passed away at the end of last week. And we wanted to bring in someone who we've talked about before, Fafu, who will get his own episode at one point because his stories are just unbelievable.
Yeah, he's like a Forrest Gump character.
He's worked with Puffy.
Yeah.
He's worked with... French Montana. He listened to the Harry Fraud podcast to hear a great story about him first meeting French. And today we wanted to bring him in to talk about his personal experiences as a drum programmer for Prince up in Minneapolis. So let's get into that right now.
All right. So I was living in Minneapolis. I grew up in Pennsylvania, but I moved to Minneapolis when I was about 19 or something. I had a fake ID and I used to go to all the clubs and bars. I didn't drink. Right, he didn't smoke back then. Used to go hang out and just hang out on the scene and just try to meet everybody and get into the music scene out there. And over time, I became friends with his drummer, Michael Bland. Yeah, I mean, we were working on pro- projects together. We were collaborating on things, and in the Prince band, at the time they were triggering a ton of samples. So Michael had a whole rig of drum loops and samples that he would trigger, and it was amazing the way they did it. Like nowadays, people just have a laptop with, you know, Ableton Live or whatever, but back then they were all two keyboard players were triggering horn samples and background vocals and guitar samples, but the drum rig was like, in particular, you know, pretty involved. And Michael knew that I was making beats at the time and programming drums on stuff that we were working on, so he had me come out. Oddly enough, his drum programmer Dave moved on to be a video editor, which is what I do now.
Crazy.
So
something in the Minneapolis water.
Yeah, there's definitely something in that water. But yeah, so I came in, and the way it worked was, for the shows, they would take whatever drum loop or drum programming he had in the studio, sample it, loop it, put it in this rig, and he would trigger it with a pedal or with a pad and play along with it. So there were like three new songs that they wanted to do. So they had me come out, they had all the samples for me, and they showed me the rig and they told me how it worked. And they were like, but he wants you to add a little something, like, you know, make it like a remix. He wants it to sound like a remix.
So, he being Prince.
Prince, yeah. Which at the time he wasn't Prince, you know, he had changed his name.
To the symbol.
Symbol, yes.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was the boss or he or whatever. So, yeah, I came in, programmed these three things, and then, you know, and this would be after hours when they weren't after rehearsals or whatever, and the next day they would come in and rehearse, and they'd check out the stuff. Prince liked it, and he's like, I'll have him come back and work on these songs. And then, you know, I probably did another round, and then he was like, okay, cool, have him come back. And there were like 50 songs programmed into this whole rig. He's like, have him come back and remix everything. So I came back, and that was like, I had a whole catalog of like samples and things and whatnot. And I came in, and I, you know, I was totally freelance at that point. I came in and went through each song and added something here, added something there, added like sound effects and additional drums and percussion stuff.
Dog barks.
Yeah, no, actually I did add a frog ribbit in one of the loops. Prince called it cricket. He's like, yo, add that cricket to this or whatever. But it was a frog. It was like a ribbit. And it was rhythmic. It was dope. So I would add different things, and then I guess eventually, you know, and then he would have feedback because there was a lot of tracks and he didn't love everything. So I don't remember how it all transpired. It's a long time ago, but I remember there was one time when I had to sit there with him, and this is the first time I really talked to Prince. I sat with him on the Paisley Park soundstage and went through each one of the beats, and he gave me comments, and, you know, and he's a perfectionist.
Yeah.
So it was, everything had to be perfect and to his liking or whatever. And, you know, so that was like, that was the first time that was, you know, I was young. I was like 19 years old, nerve wracking, sitting there with like one of your idols and having to input drums into the, you know, into the thing in front of him. And, you know, it was good. It was like boot camp.
Did you speak the same language?
We both spoke English. Yes. But yeah, I mean, I was super into like, you know, that music and hip hop. And
so did any famous people ever come through Paisley Park?
I mean, tons. Yeah.
Like who?
Yes. I mean, everybody from like the Beastie Boys would be rehearsing there. Spike Lee came out to meet with Prince about the Girl 6 movie. You know, I mean, that place, it's a professional recording studio too, so there's just always celebrities around. But I remember one guy that I met that was interesting was Dave Chappelle, because he really wasn't like a household name yet at that point. But Prince must have had some recording of one of his shows or something, and one of his sets, and they were sampling bits from him and using them as interludes during the show. So it would be like these funny race jokes between songs in the set. And yeah, and so one time I was introduced to him, and I was like, oh, you're the guy that did those funny things or whatever. And then, you know, a couple years later, all of a sudden, he's Dave Chappelle, and he's huge. Did you guys see that video I posted on Friday?
I didn't see it.
I didn't see it.
On Facebook. There's a video that I'm in, actually, and it's a rap song. It's called Days of Wild. I posted it on Facebook on Friday. at the time, he was doing, and you know, Prince did all different styles of music, from jazz to classical to rock to hip hop to soul, you know, everything. Probably even some country stuff. But at the time, he was rapping and he was cursing like everybody was, you know what I mean? But that song in particular, like, you'll hear it. It's like, motherfucker this, whatever, whatever. But then I guess shortly after I left, I was there till 96. And I think soon after that, he became a Jehovah's Witness, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Do you think he became a Jehovah's Witness because you left?
Because of me, yes. Yeah. Definitely. No, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. He was always very spiritual. You know, he always talked about God in his songs. Mm. And yeah. And then, so I don't know. I don't know what happened, but he got into it. And you know, the Jehovah's Witness are the ones that walk around to...
Yeah, they like knock on people's doors and stuff.
Yeah.
Somebody, I just read an article about somebody opening up the door on Yom Kippur, and Prince was there with somebody else. And like, they were like, hey, like, we just want to tell you... You know, about, and they were like, well, we're Jewish and it's Yom Kippur and please go away.
Wow.
And he was like, but can I please like finish? And they were like, no.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I heard that he had done some of that.
Yeah.
And I think, and at that point, at that time, then he stopped performing all of those songs that were really sexual and had,
wait,
a lot
what
of curse-
Prince songs are really sexual?
I don't know. I heard there might be a couple. And he would change the lyrics to certain songs. There's some bootlegs of him doing Purple Rain where he makes it like this whole religious thing.
Yeah.
And I kind of, I got to say, after that, after I left Paisley Park, which I was there for probably a little over 2 years, I kind of lost track of what he was up to. I'd hear those stories about the Jehovah's Witness stuff or whatever, and I knew he had Larry Graham playing bass with him and Maceo Parker, which is incredible. Mm-hmm. But I never saw any of those shows, and I wasn't really up on exactly what was going on with him at that time. But then later, which was probably 4 or 5 years ago, when he came and did The Garden, mm-hmm. I went to the show, and he was performing all of those. I mean, not the dirty songs, but he was performing all the songs, and he definitely was not on some preachy shit. He was on party mode, and you know, it seemed like he was definitely Prince again.
What did Prince mean to your career?
I mean, he started my career, really. Having those opportunities, and I give all credit to Michael Bland for bringing me around, but that was my introduction to just professional music business stuff. I went to Japan with him, went to Europe with him, all around the States, and just got to see like the, you know, the real shit, and learn to do things on that high level, high quality control level. So it was kind of boot camp, and I was super young. I should probably have been at college at the time, but I was in that college. I learned from that, and not only did it just teach me all that, my next big opportunity, which was with Bad Boy, came from that camp. There was a guy who had been a drum tech and then later moved on to be Prince's sound guy for years. His name was Scotty Pikulski. I think he changed his name, actually. But he recommended me for the Puffy gig, and, you know, I'm forever grateful to him as well. Like, and then as soon as I started working with Bad Boy and then eventually moved to New York because of that, you know, that's when my career really just, that's when, you know, everything kind of took off. So I would say that those experiences with Prince just like started everything for me.
You move out to Minneapolis. Did you think it was only a matter of time before you ran into someone in that camp?
It's a small town, and everybody I know in Minneapolis has Prince stories. You know, he'll show up. He goes out. You know, or he went out. He would go around and see artists perform all the time. And I didn't think about it that much, but it's inevitable, you know, especially being in music in Minneapolis and being into funk and, you know, black music or whatever. Like, you're going to run into people that worked with him and probably him.
Yeah, know? I mean, like, that's what was so crazy about, like, the past week when people were like, oh, he showed up at CVS 4 times. It's like, oh, of course people would know that if it's in a small town. Like, in New York, you would never be like, you know, Eric went to CVS 4 times.
Right.
You had an amazing story that you did put up on Facebook.
Yeah, that was amazing. You want me to
please
run through it? Please. Yeah, it was 94. And it's funny because after I put up the post, a bunch of people reached out to me and they're like, I have a recording of that. So I got to actually listen to it because I only remembered it from memory. And this is 20 years ago or whatever.
So I've heard it now, and I know like more about like how it played out. But I knew the guy. So okay, so it's 94. All-Star Weekend was in Minneapolis. Prince, of course, basketball fan, whatever. He throws this huge party in his studio and in the whole complex, which he had parties there all the time, and it was usually like on the sound stage he'd perform, or in the atrium he'd perform, or whatever. This time it was like studio A and B, and the rehearsal room were open. You could go and, you know, you could go into each room and there'd be an activity for you to do or whatever. And it was packed, but I'm sure it was all like basketball players and, you know, famous people basically. And I didn't work there at the time. This was like probably the year before I started, but I was friends with Michael Bland. And we were running around a lot, and he knew I always wanted to go to shows or whatever. So he invited me and somebody else to go. So I was at the show. I had met this guy at another studio that I worked at as an engineer. There was this like, you know, metal guy, but he had like a Prince symbol tattooed on his arm, which I don't even think I realized until that night. But he, you know, he was like, that was the early 90s or the mid 90s. So there was like still the 80s hair metal kind of hangover. The people didn't realize that Nirvana came and deaded that whole thing or whatever. So there was always like those metal guys around. But this dude walks in, and they were performing. It was at the end of the party. They were on the sound stage. They set up this big stage and different people performed. I was in the crowd. I see this guy come through, and he had this like, you know, beautiful stripper girlfriend, whatever. They walk up to the front of the stage. Somehow they made their way through the crowd, and the dude walks up to the stage and he plays air guitar, and he goes, and I heard this from the drummer, told me like what he had said. He said he mouthed the words, "I can smoke you," or whatever. And Prince, of course, like is, you know, that's the other thing about the music scene. I mean, you know how hip hop is super competitive. Mm-hmm. It's the same way with that, like the funk scene or whatever, that it was always like a battle of the bands, or we're going to smoke them, or we're going to, you know, it was very competitive. So Prince saw this guy and he was like, "Oh, word." and his guitar tech's name was Zeke. And he goes, "Zeke, get tattooed guitar." And so this night was like an all-star night, all-star lineup. I believe Salt and Pepper performed. I know Tevin Campbell performed. I don't remember who else. There were people DJing and stuff. But Soul Asylum had their biggest hit, yeah. Runaway Train at the time. And I think either they were supposed to perform, or just Dave Perner, the singer, mm-hmm. was supposed to, maybe he was going to sit in with them. I don't know what the deal is, but he was supposed to perform. Maybe it was his guitar. They had a guitar set up for him and an amp and everything. So Zeke grabs that guitar and gives it to the guy. And the dude puts the guitar on. You know, he's ready. This is his moment. You know what I mean? And honestly, if he would have killed it, who knows? He could have been. Prince didn't have a second guitarist at the time. He could have, you know, his whole life could have changed. But, so they hand him this guitar. And yeah, he's like, he says to Prince, he's like, "What key are we in?" And Prince is like, "What?" Like, he doesn't say shit. He runs over to one of the keyboard players and he's like, "What key are we in? What key are we in?" Like, he's starting to panic a little bit or whatever. And you hear on the recording, Prince is like, "We're in E, man. Come on, just play." and then he goes back to the center stage and he's like, "Oh," and what I didn't remember when I wrote that story is Prince actually sang the song to this guy. It was like a Ray Charles song or whatever. And he's like, "See a motherfucker with tattoo. Say he want to play guitar with you." And, you know, whatever. And fucking, so I guess it came time for him to take a lead or whatever. He's like, Prince is like, "Show us what you got," or whatever. And he goes to like, you know, go for the big like glory moment, like, "I'm gonna bend this string and hold it out and sustain it and like make faces," and you know, the whole sort of guitar god, that's who he was going for. But the guitar was set up for Perner, which is like alt indie rock, you know, it's not a heavy metal sound that the amp is set to. There's no distortion pedal set up for him or anything, and it's kind of, it wasn't a total clean tone, but it was like kind of just like a dirty bluesy tone or whatever. So he goes for this big note and like not a lot happens. And he kind of looks around. He walks up to Prince, has this huge pedal board, and he just starts stomping on pedals, right? nothing changes because he's not plugged into Prince's amp. He's plugged into this other amp. And Prince is like, what, you don't like that guitar? So Prince walks up to him as he's trying to, he's playing, but it's not, it's like, he's kind of floundering or whatever. Prince walks up to him, taps him on the shoulder, and he's and goes like this. And so he hands Prince the guitar. Prince walks up and just like starts playing this like beautiful, like these blues licks and stuff, and just rips off this like quick little thing. And then he takes the guitar and hands it back. He's like, and he says it on mic. He's like, I just want to make sure it worked. And everybody's laughing at this point. The dude's like floundering, and Prince starts calling him. He's like, ladies and gentlemen, Bud Light on the guitar. And then at the very end, I guess he let him play a little bit more, and at the very end he's walking off and Prince is like, something like, you're good. Good and awful. It was hilarious. Never saw that guy again.
Did you?
Who, Prince?
No, the other guy.
What was your day-to-day like when you were there for those couple of years going to Paisley Park?
It was awesome. It was, I mean, first of all, everybody that I worked with, shout to everyone at Paisley Park, the band and the crew and the engineers and the reception. Everybody was just awesome people and great community. So we rehearsed for like a year and then go out for a week and a half to do shows or whatever. But we would rehearse from like noon till six or something, and sometimes I'd be in the rehearsals. Sometimes they would kick us out, you know, and I would hang out in the I don't know what you call it, the tech room or whatever, in the basement where all the instruments were, and there was always be drums and amps set up, and I would jam with the other crew guys or the band members whenever, you know, they weren't upstairs or whatever. So I got hired to program these beats. As time went on, and the thing with Prince was, you know, he wasn't super open to people, but once you were around for a little while and he realized that you weren't going to like geek out around him or, you know, be weird, he started to trust you and bring you in and ask you to do things. I fell into that position after a while, and he would have me come into rehearsals and videotape them and stuff like that. I would also, because he would fire people a lot. So
yeah, so you said that like if people looked him in the eyes.
Yeah, I mean
not like exactly that, but like maybe, but
kind of.
Okay.
I mean, yeah. I remember one guitar tech came in and he was like, "Hey, I'm whatever, Jake or something," and reached his hand out, and that guy was gone like that day. You know what I mean? Like, and you know, that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to introduce yourself to your employer, but that was just a whole different world.
Yo, fuck Jake.
Yeah, exactly. Whoever that guy was. I ended up, and I'd worked in a studio before this, so And so, yeah, the other thing is that we would never have a sound guy. Prince was never satisfied with the sound. So I was in charge of the electronic drums. There was another drum tech that set up the drums, and then there were two keyboard techs. There was a bass tech and a guitar tech at various times, because sometimes there was only like three or four of us. But we were all in charge of making sure our sound was in the mix. You know what I mean? So it was kind of a competition. And that didn't work, but but I was the only one that really had studio experience and mixing experience, and I had no live sound experience, and I still don't, because that terrifies me. But I knew a little something, so I ended up being like the sound guy and mixing the shows. And as he would fire these guitar techs for shaking his hand, somehow I ended up tuning his guitars sometimes too. Yeah, so I remember one time we were at Wembley Arena in London, actually, and he had a guitar tech. He picked up his hollow body or something and strummed it, and he was like, and I didn't go by Fafu back then either. I hadn't really become myself yet, I guess. But my real name's Mark, and he's like, Mark, my guitar's out of tune. And I was like, I didn't tune it. and he hands it to me. He's like, can you hook me up? And I had to tune his guitar in front of his guitar tech.
Jesus.
Yeah.
How'd you do?
I mean, I there was a tuner there, so it wasn't that tough. But
you didn't get fired.
No. I never got fired. I got fired when everybody got, like, he basically let the whole band and crew go all at once after he got married the first time. We went and did some shows in Hawaii that were kind of like honeymoon shows, and then I think he went on a honeymoon, I don't know. And then they came back to the studio and basically let the entire band and crew and all the engineers and everybody, they just shut the whole thing down.
How did he tell you?
he didn't. So, you know, the production manager called every, it was one of those days when they call each person into the office and you start to, after a while, you start to figure out like what's going on.
Right.
Yeah. And then I saw him like 6 months later, they called me in to help with something. I don't know. And yeah, and he was super cool, you know.
Okay, so one of my big questions about Prince over the years has been, does Prince own a t-shirt? Have you ever seen Prince in a t-shirt?
No. I never saw Prince in a t-shirt or jeans.
Did you ever see Prince relaxed?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's a different thing.
Yeah, but like what was his sort of like relaxed wear?
Oh, no, dress-wise? No. I mean, yeah. He was always Prince. Like, he was always in full makeup, in full high heels. He had on some, you know, he had a very strong smell. Like, you could tell if he was at the studio or not because you could smell it.
Did it smell like purple?
I mean, it smelled like, yeah, I mean, I don't know what purple smells like, but yeah, that lavender. I don't know. It's, yeah. He had a, whatever he wore, he definitely wore the same thing every day because everybody knew when he was around from the smell.
Did you ever experience Prince working with any other artists like that would just come to the studio?
He would jam with other artists.
Like who?
Well, when we would be on tour, well, here's another thing about Prince. He loved to play music live. That was like, you know, that was like his fix or whatever, his addiction or what, just his drive. Like he just loved to play live. So we would go on tour and do shows, like, you know, arena shows, and almost every single night, and sometimes on off nights when we weren't even doing a show, we would go into a small club and do a show at like 4 a.m. and anybody, I don't know if he would reach out to people or people catch wind that he was in town or whatever, but, you know, like we would be in Dublin and Bono came out and sang with him or whatever. Chaka Khan would come and sing with him or, you know. So I saw him jam with people. And sometimes it's funny, I can't even, well, I'm not even going to say who, but there was like a big hip-hop producer at the time, or R&B hip-hop producer that was at Paisley Park. They were doing a show, and he calls the dude up on stage, and he's like, yeah, you know, sit in with us, whatever. Dude couldn't play, you know.
Did you have a new appreciation for Prince's music from working with him than before?
Definitely. I mean, I already liked his music a lot before I worked with him, and I knew about Prince even more so from being in Minneapolis. I guess I was probably in Minneapolis for 1 or 2 years before I entered that camp. And in that time period, talking to all the musicians around town, and including the people in his band and people who were working with him, I kind of had an idea of what to expect from him musically. But seeing it live, you know, was awesome. I would be sitting off the side of the stage next to this big refrigerator size rack that had all this equipment in it or whatever. And that was my job at first. And underneath the stage would be his guitar amps. So he had a distorted guitar amp and a clean guitar amp. And his clean amp was facing me, and I could just hear all of his funk, like, right there in my face. And I mean, it was incredible. I mean, he's the most effortless guitar player and bass player and piano player. I mean, he was so good. It's ruined it for me because I came out to New York and, like, you know, I worked with some great people here, but nobody can play like that. Nobody can just effortlessly pick up anything and just make it sing, you know. I witnessed, there's an album that he did that he recorded totally live to DAT tape, just a stereo recording. It was him, a drummer, and a bass player, basically like a Jimi Hendrix kind of setup. It was his power trio, this rock trio that he had, that was kind of his side, like he had his main thing that he was working on, but at night they would rehearse this power trio. And I witnessed him record the whole thing. He did it all in one take, all in sequence, didn't overdub anything, didn't mix anything after the fact, and it was just incredible. It's just like, I think he wanted to prove to the world that he was like the guitar god that we all know that he was. But I think that because he was a sex symbol pop star that had crazy hair or whatever, you know, he probably thought he didn't get the credit he deserved. So he made this record, and he wanted to give it away free with Guitar Player Magazine, which is funny because nowadays everybody gives away music for free.
Right.
But Warner Brothers wouldn't let him do it. So, but it's incredible. I found it later online. Somebody found it for me. I still listen to that. I was listening to that the day before he died.
Wow.
Yeah. Crazy.
Did you ever run into Prince after you left Minneapolis?
I did. I didn't talk to him, but I went to the show at the Garden like 4 or 5 years ago, and one of his keyboard players, Morris, was either still playing with him from that whole time or maybe he was back in the band. And Prince also, this goes back to what I said earlier about the mix. Prince had his keyboard set up in the crowd by the soundboard. So after the show, he was out there and like greeting fans or whatever. So I went down and talked to him for a minute. And he was like, "Oh, you got to come to the after party. We're playing at Butter." So I was like, "Fuck yes." So I went to the after show at Butter. They had moved all the tables out of the way and set up drums and set up instruments, amps and stuff, and hung out till 5 a.m. And they jammed and was like Janelle Monáe and who else was there? What's her name? Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
Cyndi Lauper
was there. And Questlove was there. And Questlove was just sitting on the side. And at the very end of the night, Prince points over to him and like points to him to go to the drums. And he takes the bass from the bass player. And the two of them do this drums and bass thing. They jammed for like 10 minutes. And I was like, wow, this is incredible. Later on, the next day, I looked at Questlove's Twitter or whatever. And it turns out they were performing this song called like Colleen Bacon Skin or something. It was some jam that Prince had done with Morris Day. Because one thing that not a lot of people know is that a lot of the funk drums on early Prince records were Morris Day from Morris Day and the Time.
Whoa.
He's a dope drummer, and he played a lot of the like really like funkier shit, like the song Tambourine. Yeah, and probably like most of the drums on the Time stuff or whatever. So it was some song that Questlove had heard on maybe a bootleg or something, and he had said in an interview, "Oh, one of my favorite Prince songs is this song Colleen Bacon Skin," or something like that. I'm probably not getting it perfect, but I guess Prince read that and was like, "Come over here," started playing it. Questlove fell right into it or whatever. It's funny because Questlove at one point brought his phone out and he tried to tweet while he was playing, and Prince looked at him like, "Motherfucker, you better put that fucking thing away." Yeah. Now, but that was awesome to kind of see and be in that scene again, because I'd been away from it for so long, and like, you know, the music that they were playing at that party and everything was like, it was like being back at Paisley Park in that era, and they were listening to all this like Graham Central Station and Sly Stone and like just dope shit.
Is there any Prince era that speaks to you more than any other?
I mean, his most famous era is the 80s. I really love the few albums that he did right after Purple Rain. So he did Purple Rain and he wasn't really a huge star yet. And then the album came out and the movie came out and all of a sudden he was huge pop star. And he went on tour and they were on this huge tour around the world or whatever. And I think if I am correct that he stopped the tour halfway through and he's like, "Fuck this. I'm not this guy. Like, this is not my whole thing." And then he puts out this album Around the World in a Day, which is basically like a psychedelic rock album. It sounds like Sgt. Pepper's or, you know, that era Beatles stuff on some of the songs. And, you know, he just went in a totally different direction. That album is incredible. And then the album after it, Parade, which also has its own sound. So Around the World in a Day, Parade, and Sign of the Times, which is the next album, the double album. Those are my favorite Prince albums, I think. And it's just like he was in this zone where he could do no wrong, and he was doing all these different styles together, and they all worked, and there was magic to it, you know. And then later he got into doing a bunch of hip-hop stuff, which is when I came around, and that was cool. But I really think that was my favorite era.
I was watching his first TV interview ever.
I know it.
And where MTV, somebody asks him, "People think that you sold out by doing Purple Rain to white audiences. What are your thoughts on that?" And he goes, "This ring costs a lot of money."
This ring costs a lot of money. He had a funny sense of humor.
Yeah.
One thing that I kind of wanted to bring up, I know that like the Prince heads are going to hate me for saying this, but in how I was describing how his albums, like every album was different from the one before it. I think for the hip-hop heads, since this is a podcast for hip-hop heads, generally, yeah, right? Mm-hmm. It's for your audiences.
And Prince heads, you know.
Of course. I think that, you know, to kind of relate it to somebody that's currently doing their thing, Kanye West and Prince have a lot of similarities. Every single album is a different direction. He was like, fuck corporate takeover of music. He was totally against that. Every album, he had a different look. He had a different style. The music was a different style. He was always challenging himself. He never wanted to repeat what he was doing before. He went against the advice that people were trying, you know, would give him, and like had a huge huge sort of cult following. Even in, you know, when there were tons of people that didn't like him as well, but he spoke to that thing. And that, like, you know, as I watched like Kanye sell out Madison Square Garden to have an album release party, like that's the kind of following that Prince had. And if you listen to the Pablo album, it's this mix of gospel and sexual and hypersexuality. Like, that's Prince all day. Now, obviously, totally different types of artists. Kanye, no one's going to say that Kanye has a kind of musical talent that Prince had. But as far as like being a visionary and having working your ass off and even going into debt to make sure the art that you're creating is as dope as fuck. Mm-hmm. And because that's all you care about, and being so passionate about it and freaking out on people. And you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of similarities there. And if you go to today, like, look, I mean, my album's only going to be on Tidal. Well, guess what? Prince, my album's only going to be on Tidal. All of his shit is only on Tidal right now. Tidal made a shit ton of money on Pablo, and they made it. I'm sure in the last 4 days, they made a shit ton of money on Prince.
Yeah.
Because that's the only place where people can stream his classic music. So, you know, I think it's really interesting the parallels there. Now, I know a ton of Prince people that hate Kanye West. No. So they're going to... So don't make that the headline. Fafu compares Prince to Kanye.
Well, we really appreciate you coming through. We look forward to when you come back for a full episode. We'll talk about all the Puffy stuff.
Awesome.
The Prince stuff, all the everything.
Cool.
And how, industry stuff.
And how Kanye is exactly like Prince. That's so right. Thank you for telling that.
Okay.
That's the headline.
Rest in peace to Prince, and rest in peace to Bud Light.
Yes.
So before we get into this episode with Kamaya, let's just take a second and ask this very important question. Have you ever logged into a streaming service and spent more time looking for something to watch than watching a show?
Well, that will not happen with CISO. CISO is curated comedy for people like you, like me, and like Jeff.
Yes, so CISO for yourself. CISO's got all 40 seasons of Saturday Night Live.
It has the entire Monty Python library.
All the Kids in the Hall, Parks and Rec, both versions of The Office.
Steve Carell and Ricky Gervais?
Yeah, and hilarious brand new exclusive stand-up and series from people like Upright Citizens Brigade, Cameron Esposito, Dan Harmon, Scott Aukerman, and Jonah Ray.
Every single week. Now, it's 100% ad-free and costs just $3.99 a month. Not even
$3.99 a month?
Not even $4. Remember when you could go to the video store and you could walk down to the comedy section? It's like that, but better.
Go to CISO.com and start watching all the comedy you can stream for free. CISO's got all of NBC's late night shows the next day and new stand-up every day of the year, plus original series from the funniest people on earth, all for just $3.99 a month.
How much?
$3.99 a month.
All the best comedy in one place. Go to CISO.com. That's SEESO.com. Only $3.99 a month with no ads, no joke.
No big whoop.
Now, before we get into this episode with Kamaya, Jeff, if people want to find more It's the Real, where can they go?
You can go to soundcloud.com/awasteoftime. You can also go to iTunes and search for A Waste of Time with It's the Real. We are It's the Real. You can find us on Twitter, on Instagram, on Snapchat.
On Facebook, just ITSTHEREAL.
All one word. No apostrophes, no spaces.
That's right. And we should probably start the episode when, you think?
Probably now.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. the Deer Hunter, a.k.a. Buck, Buck, Buck.
Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. Smoking Ghost, a.k.a. Inhaley Joel Osment.
It's Kamaya.
Yeah, this is a waste of time, but this is the real. Bow, 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 you don't understand how much we were looking forward to getting you here, because your mixtape is...
It's all we listen to.
It's all. I promise you, it's all we listen to.
Thank you.
It's so like refreshing and different, and a lot of people put us onto you early. Our friend Alex Chichimaro,
yep.
Our friend Ashley Kamenowitz. A lot of people.
The writer
like,
Nas.
What's that?
The writer Nas.
Yeah. A lot of people were talking about you early. Mm-hmm.
Megan Garvey.
Yeah.
Everybody.
I love her.
Yeah.
She's a good person.
Totally. Yeah. And for us, it's, you know, we get a lot of established artists up here, but somebody who's like really about to pop off in a major way.
Think so?
It's such a pleasure to have
you
here.
Flattered.
Yeah. So welcome to the Upper West Side of New York.
Thank you for having me.
It's
from Oakland, so being here is like totally different.
Yeah.
Especially you guys is fucking driving. It's crazy.
Well,
do people drive here? People don't really drive here.
You guys, it's like, fuck you, I wish you would get in this lane type driving. It's like, that's not what I'm used to. I'd be like in a car with the driver, like, no. And he like, still do it. And I'm like, I guess that's just the way they drive.
But you're not behind the wheel out here.
No. Hell fuck no. I would never, ever drive in New York. That's just not something I'm trying to learn how to do.
Have you taken public transportation here?
Yes, actually, last time I was here, we got on a train.
How was it?
It was an experience.
Okay.
Did anything like weird happen?
No, it's just like trying to understand the logic of take this train to that train, then you get on this train, and it may be a bus that take you to this place. It's like, whoa.
You know what's wild is that if you live here, it all like makes sense. It's weird, and it crisscrosses, and there's a lot of like mismatching things. But if you're here, you get used to it, and it just makes
sense. You know that like, you know, the 2 goes to the F, and then you take like, you know.
Yeah.
See, where I'm from, we only have one train, and
they're
like.
The BART.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, like, okay. We're going to Dublin, or this is going to go all the way here, and you know just to look for the stop. Yours is like, no, this going that direction, this one go to that direction, and that one may take you over there, but you got to get on this one and make it to where you really want to go.
But you made it.
What the fuck? It's confusing.
So wait, so you're from Oakland, or are you from outside? Okay, so...
I was born in Oakland. Where is Oakland?
I know you went to Hayward High School.
I got kicked out of Oakland School District my freshman year, like the second half.
What'd you
do?
Well,
I didn't technically get kicked out. What happened was
too big.
It was a situation where it was like an older person who was grown came up to the school and like fought me. And my family is like hella gangster. So the school was like intimidated. Like either you take her out or we're going to kick her out. So we're going to give you an upper hand. Like if you want to take her out, so it's not on her record to move her to a different district.
So one day you just, that was it?
Yeah, like it was like, I say April of my freshman year, I moved to Hayward and ended up at Hayward High because of that.
How old was this person who came down to your school?
She was like 40. 18, 19.
Oh, my God.
No, you know, I was like 14, 15 years old when it happened. So my family like, yo, this my niece, my, you know what I'm saying? Like, where is this B word, et cetera, at? You know, and the school was like, you know what? It's just too much. Your family's calling us, making threats. Like, it was crazy. And it was just going too far. And it was like, I'm just going to move to different schools. And I feel like me moving from there over there saved my life, kind of, because I was like going down a bad path, like
really
in gangs and just crazy, like just up to no good.
Really,
like it helped me focus on my music and stuff that really mattered, because I got back in touch with like people. Because you know, my mom lived in Hayward when I was a kid, and I lived like there, and then I moved back to Oakland. So when I went back, like, you know, people in Hayward never fucking move, ironically. So now I go to high school over here, and it's like the same fucking kids from elementary.
Well, let's start from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
You have how many siblings?
I have 2 brothers.
Older?
3. I don't like one, so.
Okay, all right. Are they older?
Yes, I'm the youngest.
Okay, you're the youngest.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean that you were just, like, sort of left alone and...
I feel like even, like, with my friends and my relatives, I've always been, like, the leader. So, like, people kind of, like, follow, like, what I do, even with my brothers. Like, I'm the strong one. Like,
yeah.
Even though I kind of, like, want to be like you, it's, like, I'm the dominant one.
Right.
So it's always been like that since I was a kid.
And so you guys, did you all, like, hang out as kids? Like, is there a big age difference, or were you all
no,
sort of...
No, stair steps. I'm 24.
Yep.
My oldest brother's 26, and my other brother's 25, so it's, like,
stair nice. Steps.
Why does everybody think that you're 21, by the way?
It was a joke. You know, I started... They're like, how old are you? I'm like 20. I want to be 21 forever. So if I say I'm 20 because I'm talking about drinking, my birthday's in a couple months, so I just turned 21. Yeah. That was my thing. And then my manager's just like, no, yo, you got to fix this shit. Like, you don't want to start off with no lies. I'm like, if I want to be 21, damn it, I could be 21. People lie about that age all the time in this damn industry.
Shouts to Lil Wayne. Yeah.
And then my manager's like, you really young, so you don't have to lie. You really young. I'm like, why can't I be? And I'm like, you know what, fuck it. I'll tell the truth. But it became such a thing that it's like everyone keeps reporting it. Like, even Megan, I was like, yo, I'm not 21. I'm like, I'm 24. So I'll change it right now. But it was already in an MTV interview. So they're like, 21-year-old aspiring rapper with her debut. give you. Blah, blah, blah. I was like,
yeah, by 24, you're grizzled. 21, you're like an ingenue.
And I actually seen one that said I was 19. Like, yo, how the fuck you go from 21 to 19?
You Benjamin know what's wild, Button, by the way? What? At what point do you not, are you past being an aspiring rapper? Like, you've been rapping, you're a rapper, right?
I feel like it's just that the notoriety of you, like how long people actually know you.
Okay.
Right? And what do they know you for? And that's what they categorize you off of.
So, yeah, I think for us, it's taken us 8 years to be aspiring.
Can we just be SoundCloud rappers?
Yeah. Right.
That's what we are?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We're on the come up.
That's right. So, you're growing up, you're with your brothers. What's elementary school like?
For me, elementary was like tumultuous because it's like I started with my mother and then I became a foster kid. So it's like I was like bounced around like crazy. I went to like minimally 5 fucking elementary schools. Like,
really?
Jesus.
Crazy.
Well, so how do you hold on to friends at that age?
Exactly. So it's like that's why I like now like I have so many associates and friends because it's like I went to so many different schools and different places and things like that. People remember me because I don't give a fuck where I go. I make an impact. So it's like I know people from different walks of life. I know people from this. I know this and that. And so it's like I keep certain friends. Like one of my best friends to date, I feel like I told him like all the time, like I feel like God just wanted us to be best friends forever. Like he's actually my hype man on my South by performance.
Dope.
Because like we met because when my mom lived in Hayward, his cousin lived next door to us. So it was friends. Then I went to a foster home and one of the schools I went to actually ended up going to it and we linked up again like that. Then I moved away again back to Oakland after I got out of foster care. And when I went to Hayward High, he was going to Hayward High and we've just been like this ever since. So like I think it was just meant for us to be friends forever.
That's dope.
So when you're always like the new kid in class, like that you always have to like say like something like interesting about yourself or whatever? Or is that like a TV thing? I was never the new kid. I was in the new kid once.
And, I feel like that's like an elementary kind of thing sometimes in certain aspects of school. It depends on when you start there. And that's the one thing I hated the most about like moving so much. Because it's like I get familiar with people and then now I got to get yanked away and go here.
Yeah.
It fucking sucked.
Yeah, I bet. So did you move like multiple times within 1 year? Like what was the most time you spent at one school?
I feel like I was staying in places for like 2-3 months and not move. Because like with foster homes, you never really know how long they want the kid or if they feel like, because with those people it's like literally what they want or what you suit them for, because everyone has their own ulterior motives to why they have a foster child.
So you're switching families too?
Yeah, like you're switching each family, like you're gonna move from this one and this one and that one. So it's like really weird.
Did you move collectively with your brothers?
No, they were in one and I was in another.
So how do you maintain contact with them as a
we didn't young until person? Like I got like out, because when I got out of foster care, it was because my grandmother got me. Or when I had like weekend visits, sometimes they'd come like over to her house because I had like the weekends where I can go like home.
And how did you find your foster parents each time to be? Were they all like welcoming? Were none of them welcoming?
It was just very different.
Yeah.
It's different. That's the only word I can use to describe it. It's like something I don't think no kid should go through. Like, because you, like I said, those people aren't literally always there for the well-being of a child. Like, so I feel like I don't like the shit. I wouldn't let my, so I don't want children until like I'm substantially ready, because I feel like it's a lot to deal with.
Yeah.
And if this is the type of shit that goes on in the world, if you don't take care of your child properly, fuck that. I don't want none. I feel like that's some fucking selfish shit to do. Have a kid and let them, you know, teeter here and there and with random people, like, because you don't know who the what the fuck somebody's into with a kid, like, you know.
You end up going to Hayward, where the, and it's I'm sure very different from where you were coming from, only because the only thing I know is that it's an urban campus and that it is the mascot was a farmer.
See, this is so the thing about like, Hayward High. So Oakland is the hood, you know, that's gangsta ghetto. Hayward is like the wannabe suburban where people who don't want to be ghetto no more move and try to raise their kids. So it's like you get a mix of the, you know, white kids, and you got like Mexicans, Samoans, and then you got the niggas still there because it's like your mom and their moms went to school together, whatever the case may be, but they moved here to try to have a better life for their children. So it was never like nothing too much off.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like you just had the integration there. That's the only difference, like versus going to school in Oakland. Like 80% of the class is black. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's a difference. That's the only difference. Now it's integrated, but you still have those niggas, and we all gonna link up because we niggas. That's what we do. Yeah.
So when your grandma took you in, that was it? You stayed with her?
No. It was like I said, it was like really like crazy how I grew up, because it's like when she got me out, because, you know, I went to foster care because my mom was abusive, so she got me out. And she was very, very abusive towards me, too. Like, very,
your grandma was?
Yeah, and physically. And then when I got to, like, high school, it was like, I reached my boiling point. Like, I don't care anymore. And we had, like, a big fight, and I ended up like leaving. She was like, get the fuck out of my house. And I was like, gladly, type shit. And I like slept in the park, and then my mom's boyfriend at that time, like I like rode the bus to her house because she was living in Hayward. That's how I was going to school over there. So I rode the bus to her house, and I was just like, you know, I'm tired of this. These people keep doing this to me. And he was like, you know what? I told your mom to get you out of there a long time ago that you are her only daughter. She needs to raise her daughter. He's like, you're not going back over there. So I ended up back with her. And it just wasn't a lovely experience because at that point, it's like you have like a mature adult who's set in their ways and you want them to be a certain type of way. And I'm like, you can't alter my personality. If you wanted to do that, you should have been in my life, you know? And it was just like a big thing that we went back and forth with for a long time. Even still today, like our relationship is kind of bumpy because of that, because it's like you can't alter who I am.
So how often do you see your mom these days?
I mean, we're better because I feel like it's space now, so it's like it's easier because I just kind of deal with you when I kind of, you know.
Does she understand what her abuse meant overall, or that she even did it?
I think she understands, but she doesn't accept her role in it. Like, she's kind of in denial about it because she kind of likes plays the victim. Like, you don't know what I've been through. And it's like, I don't give a shit. You put me through something. You should have tried to stop the cycle with me. Like, that's how I feel about it. So it's like, we kind of do like this every time we talk about it. So I don't bring it up. I just learn to love and accept her for who she is and deal with her in increments how I want to.
So who put you on to, like, all these 90s musical influences?
Just growing up.
Yeah. But I mean, like, you know, you also...
You know, you're in a car with your parents. They're going to listen to certain music. So you're going to take in what you like. You know what I'm saying? And I just feel like the ones that I took to the most were the ones that, you know, were true to me, I guess, like the TLCs and shit. Like, I was like that because I have all brothers. Like, I just, you know, so I'm a tomboy. I'm like the only girl with a bunch of brothers, so it makes you like rough around the edges.
Yeah, but does that mean your brothers were listening to TLC?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Like, to they're escape, not those type of guys. Yeah. Yeah, they're not those type of guys who want Who's Who Good to listen.
Right.
Like, they listen.
They only listen to Too Short.
That's right.
Right. Yeah. No, definitely not. My brothers were like weirdos. Like, they were like the skateboarding, backpacking black kids. Like, you would never think they were like that because now they're like hella different. Mm-hmm. Like, but like, no, they were like Backstreet Boys, NSYNC skateboarder type of kids.
Wait, those are like three different types
of kids.
I know,
that's a type.
No, I'm just saying, it's like, you know, you, like, you most... typical black kid, you think they're like one way. Like, no, my brothers are like into all the shit. Like, the picking up the bug off the ground eating type of people. Like,
they were I don't know that type. Yeah.
They were really weird. Like, they used to like burn ants with like magnified glasses and pick them
okay,
up.
Okay, that I get.
Like,
yeah.
You're fucking sick. Like, it was like they were weirdos like that. Like,
but now your brothers were sort of like ahead of their time because insects are becoming like this thing that's like sort of fancy.
Right, it's the new food.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, it burns. Eat it. It's hot on your tongue. Like, I don't think I want to eat an ant. No, thank you.
So you didn't follow your brothers into skateboarding, Backstreet Boys, NSYNC, that whole
No,
rap.
I liked the music side, but as far as, like, skateboarding and shit like that, no, that wasn't my
Not thing. At all.
Did you have a scraper bike?
No.
Did you get your driver's license?
Yeah, when I was 16. My right. mom's boyfriend at the time told me how to drive.
Taught you how to drive.
He told me a lot of things. Like, I'm like, damn, you did more shit than me for my daddy. Damn,
Is he still a part of your life?
Because okay. They kind of like broke up, but I call him my dad because I feel like he did so much for me. So, you know, it varies when we talk, but for the most part, like, he taught me a lot of things. And he always told me, like, before I die, I'm gonna make sure you never need a man for nothing. Like, that was his biggest thing. Like, I don't want you to ever depend on a man for nothing.
That's pretty great.
I mean, except you're depending on these two guys to ask you good questions. Decent questions. Yeah.
About scraper bikes.
Yeah.
I read that at 9 years old, that's when you really started to get into music.
Yeah, it was like the Bow Wow, What's My Name video. It was like, it made me want to rap. Like, ooh, he's a kid, I'm a kid, he's doing it, I want to do it. And
same.
Like, kind of start writing it, and it just worked for
when
me.
Did you, like, start recording, though?
11.
11?
Yeah.
Where
were you recording?
It was this guy, like, in my neighborhood who had a studio in his house, and he just, like...
So you're 11 years old, and you knock on the door, and you're like,
no,
so...
what happened was, it was a Boys and Girls Club talent show, and he figured out, like, oh, she can, like, spit, like, she has something there, you know? He was like, he talked to my grandmother about it. He's like, yo, I have this studio, and I think she's dope. I think you should bring her around. Because he had a son, too. He was, like, a little younger than me that he had doing music with. And he was like, yeah, I think it'll be dope if you let her come through. And, you know, I stopped going over there once I became a high school kid because it's like he wanted me to rap about certain stuff. And back at that time, I wanted to be something different because the music was, like, hyphy.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not doing this shit. It's corny. I want to do this. So it's like this. And I ended up at Youth Uprising in Oakland where I kind of, like, got to indulge in all those things.
When we did sketches back in the day every week, we had a series that we would do every so often called right. Failed Ideas in Hip Hop, right? Yeah. And they were just funny ideas that we couldn't stretch into a 3-minute sketch. Mm-hmm. they were just like short little things. Like, do you remember any of them?
We had one that was bringing back New York rap, and it was us just chanting that.
Yeah. there were just a bunch that we put together, but one of them, there were all these funny ideas, and then we were just like, hyphy. Hyphy is a failed idea in hip-hop.
I mean, yeah. I don't think so, though. I think, like, with the Bay Area origin, a lot of people take from it and put their own spin on it. Because hyphy is still kind of here.
Still?
Yeah.
On the radio?
But like, it's so, even like, localized, with, like, though.
You know, it's just not called that. Like, you know, when Waka Flocka came out with, oh, let's do it, the dread shaking in it. You know, that's Oakland. Because a lot of people from the Bay Area move to Atlanta. Like, I see the influences. That's Oakland. Like, but you don't call it hyphy. You just call it crunk. Same shit. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You just put your own twist on it. You'll never get the whole impact of it because it's not the original essence.
Right.
Like, when you go to the Bay, it's going to always be like, I like this shit. It's a little different than that, but it's the same thing.
What was the movie about crumping?
Crunk? Like, you know what they call it? Crunk.
No, I know crunk, but like crumping.
That was
like,
that LA thing.
It was Rise.
Rise.
R-I-Z-E. Yeah.
Right. Never saw it.
I mean, I definitely.
Never saw it. It was a good movie. It was a great movie.
Was it a good movie?
Yeah, it was about this guy, Tommy the Clown from L.A. Like, he just took a bunch of kids and had this dance shit. I thought it was dope when I saw it.
That's cool.
Yeah. I danced.
I actually used to be a dancer.
Really?
You know turf dancers in Oakland? Like, you never heard of turf dancing?
Mm-mm.
I used to be a dancer. Like, most of the turf dancers now, they're like, oh, it's in like E-40 videos and stuff like that. Or Chris Brown, certain people use them. But I was a turfer.
Really?
Yeah, it was like right before I started like taking my rap serious. It's like either I'm going to play basketball, rap, or do this shit.
Huh.
I'm like, I want to rap. Fuck this. So I quit.
Did your dance crew have a name?
Who, me? Yeah. I was in the Turf Fiends. Like, I was in the Turf Fiends. That's like one big one.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another one called the Animaniacs. I didn't really like that one because it's like they had me like on a junior Animaniacs, which was a GoBots. I was like, I'm not a fucking GoBot.
GoBots.
I was at school dancing one day and one of the guys named Gary, he was like a Turf Fiend. He was like, yo, you dance? I'm like, yeah. He's like, I think you should come to my team's practice. And I went and he's like, no, we want you to dance with us. So I started kind of like battling for a while.
Then. Huh.
I didn't like it.
Oh, okay.
I still don't understand it. Like,
thanks,
the battle
Gary.
Dance. Like, how do you make money doing this? Like, you know, and it was like, yeah, I don't think I want to do this. I'm just going to do my rap shit.
So, wait, is it like you got served, or is it more like America's Best Dance Crew, or?
It's kind of like ABDC, but like one-on-one type shit.
Mm-hmm.
Or the two-on-twos. So, it's not like all the way, like, every motherfucker just hatching it out. Like, it's like strategically set up battle. So, it'd be like Kamaya versus Missy Legs or some shit. And then,
that sounds like Mortal Kombat.
Exactly. Like, my name was Miss Smooth because I was like a smooth ass dancer. So
okay.
I was Miss Smooth versus whoever the case may be, and then we'll battle.
And did Miss Smooth ever lose?
I feel like with the Bay Area, it's like more of a crowd thing. And at that time, like, the Animaniacs like had the Bay Area in fucking lock. Like, it's like this guy named Zeus, and they just, you know, the crowd goes off of what they love. And
I
feel like they're like kind of like the Les Twins, like, you know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the Les Twins learned from these two guys from the Bay Area named Chunky and E-Ninja.
Okay.
They were like good ass 2-on-2 dancers. So they kind of used to come, like, before they were Beyonce dancing and shit, like, they used to go to Youth Uprising in Oakland and like be up there and shit. Like,
crazy.
So it's like a little, like I said, like, a lot of people come to the Bay and get shit you just don't know because it'll never be mentioned.
Yeah.
But we influence a lot of shit. It's just like, it's just not known mainstream.
I mean, I know Carlo Rossi Wine.
E-40.
Yeah. The whistles on the back of the car.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hated that shit. That's like the most ghetto historical Oakland shit ever. It became a thing where people like took the tops off their pants and used to like walk around the hallways just it was just like crazy. Like, this shit is ghetto. Like, this is crazy. That was a big ass thing back then when it was a hyphy movement. It was crazy.
Jeff, what was your favorite?
Ghost Riding the Whip?
Come on. No. Oh. Obviously, but what was your favorite line?
Oh, Jesus Christ had dreads to shake him. Yeah.
I
ain't got none, but I'm planning on growing some.
I knew he was going to say that. Yeah. Yo, when that shit came out, I felt like we was on top of the world. You know, my 8th grade class wanted to graduate to that shit, and they wouldn't let us. They made us graduate to Guap, like, closer to my dreams. We was pissed. Like, we want to graduate to Temple. We go, we leaving this. We going. Let us go. Let's go stupid about it. They're like, you guys are not doing that shit. Made us do Closer to My Dreams.
I wanted my prom song to be Trick Daddy's I'm a Thug.
Mm-hmm.
That was good shit.
Be hard.
But then my class instead chose Madonna. Mm-hmm. What was that one? It was one of her like very slow ballads, and it's like I'll remember or something. And I was just like, well, that's very on the nose for my high school
class.
My
friends and I tried to get the class hangout because, you know, they're like, oh, it's gonna be like a bar or like some spot or whatever, and we're like, oh, we want to make it the Christian reading room. Like, really tried hard to get that to happen, but didn't happen.
Yeah, the school committees be assholes.
It's did you?
How you ask us what we want to do and then be like, no, you can't do it? What the fuck you ask us for?
Did you win any superlative in the yearbook?
in eighth grade, like, I was, like, the rap chick because we had rap battles. So I won, like, it was, like, battles all through the year. And then I won, like, the crown and the, like, even if you go to the school now, it's, like, a case with, like, my name in it as the rap queen.
Type. Really?
So a lot of people, parents, like, when they, like, hear me on the radio, like, ain't that the rap girl from y'all school? I remember her name. Like, they, because I say it's Kamai. So they remember, yeah. Like, oh, shit, it's the little girl that was rapping. Like, that's crazy. She really, like, became a rapper.
That's so you weren't, like, baby back then?
No, back when I was in high school, I mean, middle school, it was just like, you knew me by Kamai, because I'm Kamai. How did you fucking know that?
Listen, I do my research. Also, you say it in interviews. Yeah. It's your own fault.
I don't know who that is. She never existed.
Now, meanwhile, if you ever, like, tour up in Vancouver and you get that Narwhar interview, you know he's going to pull something like that out.
See, this is what I prepared for, so what you guys don't know, it was a lot more shit on the internet. He'll tell you I made it private so you couldn't see it. Because I know y'all like to dig. You know, I discussed it with my friends. Like, you know what? I'm just going to do this. I don't want this to represent my career, my brand. It's gone. No. It's not deleted, but I made it private on that channel. So
yeah.
The ones that stuck up there is the ones that they kind of, like, fought to the end. Like, you know what? Fuck it. You can have these too. Whatever. Yeah.
Now, the only situation when we're gonna dig up, like, embarrassing stuff is if someone has a roast.
Mm-hmm. Like, oh, we go in on roasts.
One of our friends, Kaz, who runs this site called The Stashed, mm-hmm. at 26, so you have a couple years, he was like, I want to have a roast for my birthday. I don't want to do a dinner. I don't want to do, like, the get-together. I want to have people come and roast me. And he asked us to do it, and we went in there guns blazing.
Like, literally.
Anyone could have gotten it, and they did.
Like, ruined friendships over this thing. It was, my God. Yeah.
But, like, he had stuff, like, deep on his MySpace page. We're like, why is this still on here? Like, cached online, and just went deep into finding the most embarrassing stuff. That's the only time. We're not coming on here to be like...
So this is when you know, you use higher power and sources, and you get shit yanked off the internet.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I'm at with it. Because it's like some shit, I'm like, yo, this shit has got to go.
Yeah.
Get this shit off now before they find it. Because I just don't want... Because I see people, like, post, I'm like, don't fucking do that. They don't know that. Like, you gonna fucking know.
Oh, people are just, like, trying to do, like, Throwback Thursdays.
Yeah, because people who know me and they'll post... I'm like, what the fuck, yo? Don't do that shit. I'll be so mad. Like, this shit has got to go. Get this shit off the internet.
You mark that as spam or whatever on there. Like,
hella times. Send 10 people. Y'all do it together. Get this shit off. Like, it got to get yanked.
So, you know what's really funny? Is that you went to XXL on, I guess, this trip?
Mm-hmm.
And you stopped in there, and their big headline is that you're doing a song. You have a song with Drake coming out, right? Mm-hmm. I swear to God, we listen to your shit all the time, and I was like, it's only a matter of time until Drake reaches out.
Everyone's saying that on my Instagram, like, we knew this shit's gonna happen.
Yeah, well, it's
but
it's
I kind of, like, feel like he kind of, like, led them to believe, because, like, you know, Drake's been following me for a long time, but I'm not, like, one of those Instagrammy people who just, like, I'm popping, I got
right.
You don't know, so
right.
He was liking things, and people would be like, oh, Drake liked it, Six God likes, so I feel like it led them to know, like, okay, it's something going on here. Like, she just hadn't said nothing, so that when it got announced, they, like, I knew it.
No, I just thought from the vibes, like, I felt like this is something where, like, Drake can, like, fit in a mm-hmm. in a good scenario. One thing recently that I, like, failed at very badly was that, like, I watched Khaled snaps, right? Mm-hmm. And he's for, like, 3 months, maybe 4 months, he gets L.A. Reid's book, L.A. Reid, who runs Epic Records, and he's,
I know,
like,
that is very well.
What's that?
I know who that is very
yeah.
well.
Yeah, but he's, I'm saying for the people who don't know, like, out there, but he's reading, like, his book for, like, months, and I was just like, Khaled's either, like, very slow at reading, or, like, something's up, and then he signs to Epic Records, and it's just like, oh, stupid me.
Well, I interviewed him probably, like, last year, and mm-hmm. he said his favorite book, the Quran, so maybe, like, L.A. Reid's book is the new Quran.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. I don't know anything about Islam, so.
No. Very intriguing. My whole family's Islamic.
Really? Including you?
No. I don't believe in religion.
So okay.
It's not my thing, but, you know, my mom's very Islamic. My cousin actually passed away 3 years ago, and it was, like, my first time actually seeing, like, the burial. Crazy shit. Like, they mummify them. Like, they, like, wrap them up, and they, like, bless them. Like, you're not really supposed to see the body. Like, they just kind of, like, put them on, like, a little stretcher type thing and just, like, in the ground, like, throw the nigga in the ground. Like, my auntie was, like, very adamant, like, no, this is my family, my immediate family, we need to see my son. And it was like, okay, you can't touch him.
Yeah.
Because in their religion, they believe you have to be buried in, like, the first 3 days, and you can't touch them because they can feel it, or you can't cry because the spirit can feel it. And crazy shit, true story, my cousin, like, she was, like, crying and shit, and his, like, eyes started, like, twitching. It was, like, some scary shit, and I'm like, yo, they said don't be crying up in here. Like, what the fuck? It was like crazy. She like ran outside, almost got hit by a bus and shit because it scared the fuck out of her. Like, she ran out of the masjid. Like, fuck this. What the hell was that? Like,
how does religion work for you when you're going from foster home to foster home? Like, are you just, if someone's like celebrating
put on
Christmas,
like values on you?
But see, that's what I said. I don't put, like, when I was in school, yeah. when I was with my mom, she made sure and she was adamant that we couldn't celebrate those things.
Right.
But some teachers would be like, no, fuck that. It's a kid. Let them, like, you know, still make the gingerbread house because it's just an essence of Christmas. But for the most part, my mom, like Halloween and stuff, like, I didn't celebrate that. So now I kind of be mad when I see, like, she let my nieces and shit do it. Like, why do they get to do the shit? Why do you get to, like, trick-or-treat and shit? Like,
so your brothers never took part in...
None of us.
In
I mean,
Islam,
we never did Christmas either, but we did read from L.A. Reid's book. So that's right. I guess we are very religious.
Yeah, it was like, I remember one Christmas, like, she tried to do Hanukkah. My brother was... That's another thing that's weird to me, right? She wouldn't let us celebrate it, but the nigga give us presents. So it's like... Don't get it.
Yeah, but
she
but
tried
take
to switch
that,
it up and do Hanukkah. You know, you get like one present a day. My brother was like, I don't like this shit. Like, it was like you get the little present instead of a bunch of stuff. So he was like, I don't like it. And the last day, they give you like the big one.
Yo, so we've gotten to a point now in our lives where we're all adults, right? So when mm-hmm. we see our mom, it's just like, we're going to celebrate like Hanukkah just one night. Mm-hmm. Like, it's sort of like Christmas, but
right.
like, you know.
It's Jewish Christmas.
Yeah, Jewish Christmas.
Yeah, we have Chinese food and yeah.
Yeah. And we go see a movie.
Yeah,
but that's
like,
and have one night of presents.
So wait, back to XXL. You really, really want to get on the XXL freshman list. But, I mean,
not
this
I'm
year.
I'm not, like, really, like, my thing is...
Not that you're thirsty. I'm saying that,
you
like...
You know, I feel like if they... In my own personal opinion, I feel like if you don't do it this year, I'm not doing it next year because I'm going to be too big for this.
Right.
Like, so, it's, like, up to you. Either you going... Because I'm a businesswoman first, more than anything. So, I feel like I approach the situation like a businesswoman. Like, I called her. Like, hey, how you doing? Can I meet with you? And went up there myself. Like,
that's
wasn't a situation, like, where it's like, people helped me do it. It was, like, one of those things. And I felt like, you know, in my mind, like, I tell my manager, like, yo, if they don't pick me, I'm not doing it. Like, you know, because I feel like it would be, I don't know what's the word to describe it. Like, it would just pretty much be dumb for me to go backwards. It'd be like me backpedaling, you know what I'm
saying?
Like,
agreed, yeah.
Because I feel like the freshman cover is basically solidifying that you have a staple in this industry. Watch these people because they're going to blow. And I feel like this is my year where you need to watch me because I'm going to blow. So if you don't get me now.
Right.
It's
how, and how funny is it that, like, so we've gone over the course of let's say 5 or 6 years of them doing the freshman cover, you've gone from, like, where the lead time for, like, print makes sense to get, like, certain people on there.
Yeah.
But, and you know, that's,
yeah,
like...
Yeah, but now everything moves so quickly.
Right.
It's
so
just,
it's
like... I don't even think that Lil Yachty's going to be on there. And Lil Yachty, like, everybody was just talking about.
Right.
Like, and
but
who,
like,
knows if he'll be in here next year.
And if Kamaya's project drops in March and they're rolling out the issue in, like, you know, May or whatever, they can't move quick enough where
yeah.
it's like where it makes sense, even though you're the hottest
but
out
they
right
can.
Now.
It's like they do what they want to do because they usually, like, wild card it. If they want you on there, you're on there.
Really?
Like, they literally told me yesterday, like, it's some people on there who have no impact. You don't know who the fuck they are when they pick them. Like, you know, it's just literally up to them. And then who they – because they discuss it as a panel. So whoever they go for – Vanessa kind of rides with, so like I said, like in my opinion, I feel like if you don't get me, I'm just not.
Well,
wait, when did you have the conversation with them?
Yesterday.
Oh,
see, but Jeff this morning was just like, well, like Kamaya wants to get on there, but
I was
why?
Like, who? I was like, who really cares about the XXL freshman list this, like anymore?
Like
I,
you're popping without being on there.
Yeah, and that's, you know, what my team's saying, but I feel like I won't. It's like a thing for the city because I feel like no one's from Oakland been on there, so I feel like I want to do it for that part of it. But if they don't get me, I know in my mind like I'm not fucking coming back and doing it.
Right?
Is so Iggy Azalea not from Oakland?
No Yo, comment.
The look you just gave though was so good.
How did you link up with YG in the first place?
My manager right here.
Right. But there's no better story?
No, what really happened was literally like, it was like a situation where like, I think they played him the record and then like, we did my first session in LA and he was like recording literally around the corner and they just took me over there and it was kind of like organic. Like, oh, what's up? I fuck with your shit. Like, I like your shit too, nigga. And it was like, you know.
Deal.
Yeah. Type cool thing. Like, nothing too serious.
Was he your first like, industry like, celebrity that you'd met or no?
No, because I'm really close to Too Short, so it's like, yeah, that was like that.
How do you know Too Short? Just because you guys are both from Oakland.
Well, I, like I said, I used to go to Youth Uprising. That's one way I know him. And my best friend's fathers, like, are like his, like, bodyguards and shit.
Really?
So he's like, he's around all of us. Like,
so he knew of you, like,
way
early?
Before. He knew this when I was, like, way before Kabay. Like, when I was my other person. Like, he didn't knew me.
My other person.
I won't say the name, but I was like, yeah.
So when you finally linked up with YG, what did that mean to you?
Ironically, I don't take this stuff like serious like others. Like, I just feel like people are people. It's about how you treat me and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like, yeah, it's a business, but at the end of the day, it's like, who are you as an individual? If I vibe with you, I vibe with you. So with me and him, I just feel like it's like a genuine friendship, brother and sister type situation. So it's not no big thing for us to do a record. It just kind of happens that mm-hmm. he's a big ass artist in the game.
Like, right, right. No, I think that we feel the same way. I think that Eric was asking more like the value of a cosign, mm-hmm. like somebody who's just like, because with John Legend, like, you know, he's a cool guy,
mm-hmm.
but like him being able to open those doors, that's when it's like, oh shit, yeah. I can do that.
Right.
And see, I'm big on not wanting a male cosignment. So that's why if you look on my album, it's no features.
Yeah,
he's the only feature, and that just happened like by chance because we was in there drunk and just did some shit.
Yeah.
Swapped some shit. He gave me one song, I gave him another record, and it ended up coming on my project. Like, that's literally great. How it happened.
You have a song that's produced by P-Lo.
Yeah,
and we just saw him at SOBs. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, opening for Skizzy Mars.
Yeah,
okay, yeah. That's
and yo, yeah. He was killing on there. And then we saw stuff from Philly, their last show on that tour, and he was killing there too. Mm-hmm. Like, how long have you known him?
I literally like just met the guy. Like, he's like one of the first people who was like going hard for my record, like literally. And then he was just like talking to my other manager, Francois, like, yo, I gotta give her a record. I need to be on this project. And he sent me like a couple. And, you know, his record kind of was the last record literally on my project besides the For My Dog record. Mm-hmm. Those are the last two songs I recorded. And I wanted to do a song with all my homies. So it's like, damn, what y'all think about this? Because some people was giving me other shit. I'm like, nah. And then Francois came in like on the last day, like, yo, y'all like this? And they're like, this shit slap. Let's do this one. So we ended up doing his record.
Yo, Francois gets so much burn on Twitter from you, like being like the best manager. And it's like, B More's right here.
I know, yeah, really. This is just...
No, B More knows, like, he's like the go-to businessman. Francois is like the one. We like, nigga, why do you do that? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he does a shit that's like, he's like, I talk about Tommy like my fucking big kid.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah. Even when he comes to my house, it's like, fuck. The house got shit all over the counter now. And just Francois shit. Like, you just know Franc fucking here. Like, fuck.
That's what managers do. They yes. leave a mess. Yeah.
Yes, he's just fucking crazy.
I thought they were supposed to clean up messes, but you know.
Yeah. Yeah. How did Puffy end up hearing your album?
We walked in the studio one day, like literally, I don't know if you guys know, my friend has cancer or whatever, so
yeah.
We like flew all my friends to LA and we were like going to the session, and then like while we were getting ready, because YG was finishing up his album, we getting ready to walk through the back door because for some reason they wanted to go through the back door that day, and it was like, oh, yo, before you walk in, Puffy in here. I'm like, oh. Okay, and we walk in, and he's in there. So it was like one of those things. We just was there. I was like, "Oh shit, you're here."
How was he? Was he cool?
Was he cool?
Intense?
Nah, cause you know what? Like I said, I treat people like they're people, so I don't of go off like you're Puffy. So it's just like a nigga in the room to me.
Like, I mean,
but like, there's. I feel like when we met 50 Cent, he's intense. Like,
he, but I feel like it's the aura they get from you, how they treat you. Cause like I told, this is 50 a minute ago. 50 Cent was hella sweet to me and nice.
Yeah.
And I met him in the club. He was a nice guy.
That's cool.
Yeah. But, ironically, I met him in the club.
Yeah.
Was it your birthday?
I was just going to ask, yeah.
No, it was actually an event YG had that he went to with him. And he was in there. He was a nice guy. But yeah, no, Puffy was chill. He was like, congratulations on everything you're doing type thing. And then YG kind of like start praying my records. You know, Puff has to meet the band face, so he never shows you. He has, you know, the poker face, so he doesn't show you that he likes it or not. But his man, D-Rock Low, when they stopped playing the music, he was like, yo. Like, literally, like, he was standing like, and I was like, yo, they like this shit. Because, you know, if he over here, and you know, New York people are tough motherfuckers.
He got,
so
yeah, you know us.
Like, he like a hood dude. He like, yo, that shit. And I'm like, okay, he liked it.
Yeah.
Puffy just not going to say he likes it.
Yo. He got making the band face.
You yeah. know that face, like when they play the music. He like,
yeah,
but he not saying nothing, and he gives his opinion way later. Like
right.
he got that face, like. Okay.
Okay, so when you're in the studio, you take everybody just at face value, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
When you're playing your music for someone like him, do you watch him and how he's reacting?
Mm-mm.
Really? So you're just like cool, and you're on your phone or whatever, and
that's what I do. You watch people.
I watch people. Like,
yeah,
yeah. I don't mind.
Yeah, I'm just.
They're there.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to be the overzealous artist that's just, like, trying to sell it. Like, yo, how does it feel standing all on some shit? Like, I don't want to do
so
that.
Any, see, any I do the Bobby Shmurda thing, and I dance on the table.
Mm-hmm. That's the mm-hmm. craziest shit I ever. When I say, I'm like, what the fuck kind of. I know, in labor, you could tell, I'm like, okay, what the fuck did we just sign?
Jeff was also telling me today that you were in the Down in the DM video.
Yeah, I was.
What was that like?
Another situation where YG just, we hanging out, and he's like, no, come on, you in here. I'm like, no, I was uncomfortable because I didn't know what to do. I'm like, what are you, just sit, come on, just come on. So I'm just like, if you notice, I'm just on the side, like.
Yeah, they separated.
Why Ray Shriver's like all on the table, yeah, with like the money. Like, they just all into it, and I'm just like, it goes down in the. Because I was like, what in the hell? It was just like crazy in there. Like,
yeah.
What the hell did I just get through into?
I'm so happy for Gotti, though. He's just such a good guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that record has just transformed him. It's
my favorite thing about Gotti is that when people are talking to him, he doesn't like even like make eye contact. Mm-hmm. All he'll do is he'll sort of like soft dab to himself while like bopping in place. I'm just like, that's the coolest thing ever. Just like zone people out and just bop to yourself.
I didn't know he was that damn small.
He's so small.
He's really short.
Like, cause like I thought he was like tall, and like when I see him, I'm like what the fuck?
Put him in your pocket. Yeah.
Like, it was like crazy. Like, what the hell? It's crazy because I thought 50 Cent was shorter. And I thought he was bigger, so it was just like, yeah. Ironic. Like,
yeah, you just had like no idea. No depth perception or anything.
The camera angles are so deceiving.
That's right.
Everybody's 5'9".
I don't even think Gotti is that tall.
No,
he's like much shorter.
He's a short guy.
Seven.
Yeah.
Did
you meet Khaled that day?
No, they were there earlier, so I didn't meet him. I met, you know, Ray Sherman and the people who were there on the like, because the scene we were in, like, literally was like the last scene. So.
Right. Ray Sherman also short, right?
Very.
Yeah.
Very small. That's how I'm noticing, like, a lot of people are like, I'm like, am I a big bitch or just people fun size? Mm-hmm.
Yo, the craziest show experience I've ever had, I think, was seeing Ray Shremmerd perform. And I think Jimmy, like, slid into a speaker and, like, broke his leg.
Yeah.
Or, like, things broke through his leg. It was like.
At Governor's Ball last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fucking crazy.
And so, like, then, what's the other one's name?
Sway.
And so, like, he's in the back, and he's like, oh, my God. He's like, nobody look. But this is the craziest shit I've ever seen. He's like, there's blood everywhere. And then he's like, we're going to start the show, like, in a little bit. But, like, my man back there. And it's just like, yo. And there's, like, thousands of people just, like, standing watching this.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
The craziest thing happened to me, right? Kehlani's doing our Christmas show. And then I'm, like, sick. I didn't want to do it. She's like, no, you got to come. You're coming. I'm like, fuck, shit. So I'm sick. I'm on the side of the stage. And Francois was like, whatever you do, if you fuck up, just keep going. I feel like he jinxed me. So I go up, and I'm like, oh, and I'm jumping. I trip over the speaker almost, but I like spin around it like a dance move. Kept going. Like, so that's like the craziest thing that's happened to me so far. Like, it's like, oh, shit.
Is that on video?
I don't think so.
Okay. Is Guard Work going to find it?
I know. You should say that you just like.
No, it's definitely not on video. But tell B-More to get that offline. Somebody did like get like a clip because they like tweeted it not too long ago. Like, oh, epic rare footage. Kamaya at Kehlani's Christmas concert. I'm like, oh, shit. Where'd you find this? But, yeah, I literally almost bust my ass so hard. Like, it was crazy. Like,
so we heard that labels were reaching out. And I just want to know, like, what was that process like? Like, the actual meetings with them.
Very interesting.
Like,
because I feel like everyone's going to sell you their pitch. Like, they're trying to get you to come over there. But it's literally about you being a business person and deciding what's the best fit for you. And I know. I feel like a lot of artists don't know because they more blinded by the financial side versus the business. And I'm, like, big on not being driven by money.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It has to make sense for me. So.
Right. You haven't toured extensively.
No.
And the greatest thing is that your buzz is so hot that no one can say anything. They're just like, you're like, here's who I am, here's what I have, and take it or leave it, because I'm sure of myself and I can go wherever I want to go.
Kind of, sort of.
Yeah.
Exactly what I'm
That's
doing.
Pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. So you went down to South By, and what was that experience like?
Amazing.
Because?
I just feel like, you know, my friend's sick, so I feel like that was our last experience, like, all together.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's going to always be, like, a great memory. And I feel like as far as the experience of South By in general, it was just, like, a different experience that, you know, you never forget.
Sure. Just on that subject, by the way, For My Dog is an amazing song.
Thank you.
Okay, so you go down to South By. Were you, like, shocked? We haven't been to South By. Mm-hmm. Were you shocked at how many people are down there and performing and trying to get business done and just existing down there?
You know what? When we first got there, I thought South By was like some big-ass cornfield type. They make the stages in dirt with t- tumbleweeds type
no,
shit.
No, you're thinking of the Hayward Farmers.
Shut up. But like when I saw it, I'm like, yo, this shit ain't like in the middle of nowhere. They're like, nah, it's actually venues. So I'm like, why would people, because you know, we talk to people, they're like, yo, your shoe's going to be messed up. You're going to, I'm like, well, what's going on down there? Like, so when I got there, I'm like, it's actually venues you can drive to. Like, what are you guys talking about? Like, I didn't get it. Like, it was just so overly hyped. Like, why people were like, that's why I'm like, it's just what you make of it and what you take from it. Because mm-hmm. they made it seem like it was going to be something totally different.
And you performed how many times down there?
I think 4 or 5. Because what happened was my leg was really messed up when I was at South By.
Like on some, like, Jimmy from Ray Tremor.
No, I wasn't broke, but it was just, like, I had, like, I don't know what it was, like probably tendonitis or something mm-hmm. in my knee. So I was like really like not gung-ho on doing a lot of shows, but we had a lot of offers. But I did like Fader Ford, Pitchfork, ICM, House of Vance, and Kehlani brung me out at her show.
That's dope.
Yeah, just like some light work, you know, just like, you know, 6 major shows.
And I did those were the ones I chose. But SOBs and a lot of other people reached out. I just didn't, you know, I was like, no, well, my leg. Mm-hmm. And then he'll tell you too, like, when I get in diva mode, I just don't fuck with nobody. Like, I close my door and lock it, and like, yeah, and they're like, yeah, she's not coming out. So it was like one of those things that's out by, like, once my door closed, they're like, yeah, we're not going anywhere. She's not coming out of there.
I feel like we have that in common, by the way. Like, I read somewhere that you said that you're like an indoor girl. Like, you don't like going mm-hmm. to like clubs and stuff. Mm-hmm. What? That you don't or do?
No, I don't.
Yeah. I was like, I mean, we're like, indoor
it's
boys.
It's like my moments when I like kind of want to, like, all right, let's go turn up, but for the most part, I go to sleep so fast. Like, it was crazy. Like, I had never been in Vegas, and it was like us and YG, we were in Vegas, like my first time. And YG's like, yeah, we finna turn up, we gonna go out, we finna do this, we going up, this your first time out here? They're like, yeah, you ready? I'm like, yeah, nah, I'm going to sleep. They're like, what? You going to sleep your first time? I'm like, yeah, I'm going to sleep. I look on Instagram the next day, they all on Shade Room dancing and shit, like they just had a great time last night. I'm like, yeah, I was sleep through all that shit. I was like, no, I'm tired.
Did you go to the YG, Yo Gotti, and Jeezy shoot out in the Bay?
No, actually, I didn't.
Were you not invited?
No, I just didn't go.
Oh, Francois. Actually,
I know.
This is before we even knew each other, but Francois and my good friends were like my play brother's uncle, so... His friend is a rapper. His name's Vail. He's from Oakland or whatever. So he's cool with, like, YG. So that wasn't a situation where we couldn't go. We just didn't want to go.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm kind of like I said, a homebody. Like, I don't like to be, like, everywhere, all in the midst of everything. So it's, like, one of those things. I was like, yeah, I don't think that's a good look for me, so I'm not going to go. So I didn't go.
What was the first thing that really hit for you that, like, gave people an idea that there could be something big in your music?
I don't fucking know.
You don't know when the tide changed? Like,
no, but I knew, like, immediately when I decided, because, you know, I was in a group. So
called.
When I decided to call what it was. And when I decided to go solo, I just knew, like, I had to make it, like, an impactful situation. So everything was strategically planned. Like, none of this is happening by chance. It's like, no, like I said, at the end of the day, I'm always a businesswoman. I strategically plan and think ahead of time. So with that, I knew, like, I wanted to drop Out the Bottle first because I'm like, okay, this isn't, like, going to be probably the biggest record, but it's going to get your attention. And that's what I wanted. And that's why I made How Does It Feel to Follow, because I knew that one was going to be the one that's, like, going to be like, oh, shit, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah.
And I feel like that's literally what happened. Because at first you're like, yeah, I don't know, then How Does It Feel? You're like, hold on, wait, what? Who is this? And that's what it became. Like, who the fuck is this girl?
How can people say who is this when you say your name, literally?
Yeah. But like, see, a lot of people don't know that name.
Okay.
So it was like a switch.
I know,
like,
so many Kamayas, but they should all retire.
But I'm just saying, like, you know, a lot of people didn't know my real name. Like, even like Mr. Fab, he was like, yo, I didn't know who it was. Cause he's like, you know, it was like, I knew you from that name. So it was like, oh shit. Like, that's crazy. She changed her name, changed her hair. She changed everything. Like, it was like crazy to them. They're like, oh shit, she's not playing. Like, this is crazy.
What was it like leaving your group, by the way? Was that like a weird conversation?
No, because we're still friends. You just didn't know. Like, it was like people, it was like one of those private things. Like, we just decided, like, yeah, we want to just do this. So it wasn't like a public made situation. It kind of was like integrated in, and it just like happened. So it was just like, okay, but you don't understand it, because if you watch Out the Bottle, everyone's in there. So it's like it's like maybe they're just doing solo music now, you know what I'm saying? Like, so they're like, maybe they're just trying something different.
You didn't do some like Michael Strahan shit and just sort of like, yeah, you
disappear.
Know, leave.
Yeah.
No, it was like one of those things where we just like privately was like, you know what, this ain't gonna work. Maybe we should go about it this way.
Strategic.
Yeah. Like I said, everything's strategic with us. Like, we just, and we're not very big on like social media shit. So we always like have been like, because at the end of the day, me and my friends are like family. So it's like, if this is like your brother or sister, you never want to do something that's going to damage them or, you know, publicly shame them. So we just kind of did it privately, and then it worked.
until we leak it to Nardwar. And then
good luck. Don't make me make everything private now. I have access.
Are you like one of those people who, like us, reads a lot of like rap press or R&B press and like, you know, is always sort of, no? Just like sort of driven by what people are talking about?
Shade room.
Okay. But like you are aware of like you are aware of like Fader and you are aware of Pitchfork, like that meant something to you.
But I'm not like big on social media shit because I feel like it alters people's perceptions of individuals in their selves. So I tend not to like read comments or, you know, things like that. I just shake and move because I feel like it bothers you, because, you know, in the 90s and stuff, you didn't have those problems because it was table talk. You didn't know how somebody personally felt about you.
Right.
But if you get on Instagram or something, 100,000 people are antagonizing you in your comments, then you start to feel some type of way about yourself. So I'm big on not like reading those things.
That's good. Yeah, there wasn't a great way to like buy followers in the 90s. There wasn't a great way to like buy attention.
That's definitely true too. And it wasn't a great way to know people's perceptions. And like, you know, nowadays a lot of people are like so unhappy with themselves. You give them a platform, they say whatever. Like the hit situation with Kehlani, I feel like it was just too much. Like, you guys are picking on a kid. Like, essentially, she's still a child. So I didn't agree with that. You know what I'm saying? I feel like that's the thing that I don't like social media for. Because the machine, it can either help you or fuck you up. Like, What if she really would have succeeded at, you know, what she attempted?
Oh my God.
And the whole world would have felt stupid because they were like, you know, criticizing her and antagonizing her and bullying the shit out of her for like fucking 24 hours straight.
All because they can do it anonymously.
And then they still did it afterwards. Like, you stupid bitch. You should have just died. Like, why, who says that? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that stuff is just not acceptable. And that's why I don't deal with social media.
It's nuts.
I don't like it.
There are good parts of social media.
I just feel like the way that you're able to reach people is easier.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as them having a voice in everything, it's just not okay.
Oh, no. Eric means that you can, like, deliver a pizza to anybody in the world. That's the greatest thing about social media. We went to a Khaled thing, like, this week. He had, like, a pop-up down at Stadium Goods in...
on Howard Street, 47 Howard, yeah.
Yeah, and, like, I saw, like, a bunch of pizza boxes, like, all being moved towards the door, and I was just like, wow. Real fans. Fan power. Love. Yeah. Yeah.
Are you on Snapchat? Not publicly. Okay.
You are, but you hate it.
No, I don't post things. Like, I just, like to look at people.
Lurk, yeah.
Wow.
That's my thing. I like to lurk. I'm not like big on like posting because I like privacy. Like, you know what I'm saying? I feel like the biggest artists in the world have privacy. You know, you don't see Beyonce just all on Instagram and Snapchat all the time.
So you want to get to the level like Michael Jackson, where they would close down a supermarket and let you shop, like, you know,
not
you
that, want to in the morning. Like, I want to enjoy my life and my privacy, so I don't have to let you indulge in what I don't want you to know.
Mm.
It's a choice, and I feel like so many people want you because they want attention. I'm not an attention craver.
Well, nice job giving up her, you know, old. AKA Jeff.
First of all, it should be said, it's your fault. If you never said it, then I would never have known.
Yeah, like, I'm big on that. Like, I feel like I should at least, because I feel like as an artist, you expose so much of yourself and vulnerability in your music. If I want a little bit of privacy within my personal life, allow me to have that privilege. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So I literally practice that heavily. Like, I don't post shit. Like, half the time, I post old shit on Instagram or it's just some random shit. I don't care about that. Like,
every day's a throwback Thursday.
Yeah, I don't care about it. Like, people take it. I feel like you take it too serious. Like, this is a make or break who you are, then you just don't live life the right way.
Yeah.
You care so much about this, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't care about likes. I don't care about, that's not my thing that I go off of.
That's good.
So this is the part of the interview where we make our guest freestyle for a quick 1,000 bars.
Just a quick thousand. It's fine.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
So now that you're at this point, it seems like you're sort of at like the top of the roller coaster right now. Like, things are super hot for you. Do you like, how much material do you have already recorded that you could just drop for a next project? A lot or a few songs or?
I think I got like a cool amount of songs if I wanted to. But I'm like I said, I think everything out, and I feel like everything that I'm doing has to lead up to the album. So some songs I recorded may be on the album, so they're not going to be released no time soon.
I notice on your project that you have zero features besides like YG.
And my friends.
Right. But like, in the case that your next project seems like it's going to hit really big and someone gives you like the opportunity to have a feature beyond the Drake thing, whatever that ends up being, do you feel like you would be more towards getting features like of people or you less? Yeah.
I like to send by myself. I don't want to get like, oh, Kamaya is big because of
right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. So I like to move, like, to the beat of my own drum. I don't need the solidification from others for me to feel like I'm cool.
And the same goes for the producers you work with.
Yeah, like, those people are, like, literally, like, people that are handpicked and put into this situation.
And who's your man who produced the majority of the project?
CT Beach is, like, my guy that I've knew since I was, like, 16. And then during the last leg of it, Francois brought in the honor roll kids, who
right.
the last end of my song
project. But shout out to Francois.
But with CT Beats, like, you're just... there's got to be
a... project was literally produced by 4 different people, but you can't tell.
You can't.
Because it has...
Yeah, it feels seamless.
And that's why I feel like that's what an artist should do. You bring out things in a producer that somebody else shouldn't, because creatively they should know your style.
Right.
Because you can't tell. Like, I literally had 4 different people make different beats. Like, P-Lo did one.
Right.
Then Honor Roll did something. Then CT did something. And then another guy did More Money, More Problems. But it all sounds collectively like the same shit.
It like, does.
I feel like that's what I'm supposed to do as an artist, is to bring out the best in you for me. And I did it.
Yeah, you did.
How much, like, of a hand do you have in producing the records?
Everything. Some of them beats, I literally, like, I make it, but I don't play it.
Oh, so you're, like, Puffy in that regard.
Kind of, sort of, like, because I'm telling you what to do, because I can't play it.
Right.
But I'm like, you should, you know what I'm saying? And you get it, and then until you get it, I'm going to sit there with you, so.
So when
how's your making the band face?
I was going to ask, yeah.
But I'm like really like hands on with everything, because I feel like nah, I want it to be perfect and perfected. So I sit there with a producer like nah, I want this, I don't like that. You know, a lot of artists are scared to offend them. I don't give a fuck. You're doing something for me and I'm doing something for you, because at the end of the day, we're helping each other become successful.
Right.
So if I can't bring out something in you, or you can't bring out something in me, this ain't gonna work.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna get somebody else in this room if you can't do what I'm telling you, because you shouldn't be afraid to take constructive criticism. Neither should I. That's just how you're supposed
to
work.
People take things personally?
No.
That's good.
No, I don't think so. For the most part, especially CT, because he gets it. Because he feels like I bring out his best material. Like, he tells me all the time, like, people are always jealous. Like, you always give BMG the best beats. And it's like, no. We just sit there and take the time to get our own thing, versus you just going to him and he giving you his sound. You know what I'm saying? Like, you bring out your own thing in each producer.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I do that.
So what's immediately up next for you?
The Fuck It Up video is probably coming the next soonest. The
day. That's cool.
Yeah.
And then whatever you're doing with Drake.
Is it done?
Yeah, the whole situation is finished. It's just, you know, the rollout that's next. But it's right. definitely done.
But you've heard it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Cool.
So you, and do you want to tell him that it's good?
It's amazing. You know what? I feel like it's a good thing for the city, because he makes a lot of references for Oakland. So it's like, it's one of those things when the city going to be like, fuck yeah, come on.
Yeah.
You know, people love Drake, but for him to be like, co-sign a lot of shit that we do, they're gonna be like, oh hell yeah, like it's gonna be one of the ones that Oakland just ride to. So
yeah,
like, it's cool.
He's talking about like the Athletics.
He definitely,
the Raiders.
He said something crazy in there. He was like, I'm a star like Moesha nigga, I'm running up the numbers like Aisha nigga. I didn't catch it at first, and I had to think about it, like, Steph Curry bitch, this nigga's tight.
Yeah.
This guy's fucking dope. Like, you know, he was saying a lot of stuff, but I didn't catch it at first. It's like, oh shit, this guy's crazy.
Nah. He's the best.
Yeah,
he's the best.
Oh, so, we didn't even talk about your new house.
Yeah. Let's talk about it. What's up?
It's pretty cool. You know, it's just a little townhouse in Marina Del Rey.
So chilling, like, okay. Yeah. We were in Marina Del Rey recently.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Here's my thing about Marina Del Rey. To get very, like, L.A. for a second. It's way west. And if you're not living over there, no one's ever going to get to you.
Yep.
You're never going to see anybody.
Yep.
But you will have a boat.
We were in.
But, you know, ironically, Kehlani lives right around the corner from me.
That's dope.
Really?
It's crazy. Like, I didn't know that. But I was telling Fran, like, I know she, because I had went to her house like a couple days before. I'm like, I know, because I didn't want to live where I live at. Actually, I had my mindset on a different place. But when I went over there, it was really, really racist. And I'm like, yeah, they're gonna complain about every fucking thing. I don't give a fuck if it's me just dropping a wrapper from gum. So I'm like, I'm not moving here. And then the Marina Del Rey place was just more chill. They had great security in the building. I was like, I think this is a better fit. And then it was a townhouse, and you know they want to put a studio on the bottom level. So I'm like, maybe I should just get this house so they can put the studio and everything, and I'm comfortable. So I end up moving there. And the day that I'm like getting the money out the bank to like go back and get the place, she like rides up on me in an Uber, like, sup fool. And I'm like, who the fuck? Because I see the little Mexican man driving, so I'm like, who the fuck? And I look in the back, like, it's fucking Kehlani. She's like, yo, I live like right around the corner, you moving right here?
Wait,
like,
did she get the Mexican driver to say what up, fool, to you?
No, it was like her friend, it was Edward. He was like, yo, woo, woo, some shit. And I'm like, who the fuck? Like, then I look like, you stupid motherfuckers, like, what are you doing?
See, you should have had her in a car that had a whistle on the back. That would have been
really?
Yeah, that's how you know that it's her.
Yeah, it's a friendly
she's
person
down the block.
Yeah.
She's literally like the only other person I think that lives right there. So we're like,
do you know how she's doing these days?
I was with her last night. She's out here.
She's out here?
Yeah, we just had dinner last night.
She's doing okay?
Does she want to do the podcast?
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. This is crazy.
You should let her know. Yeah. Call her up on this phone.
Wait, who's your carrier, by the way?
Like your T-Mobile.
It works on that phone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wait. So can we see your phone? Do you have it? No, you don't
have
it.
Yeah, it's in my bag.
Okay.
You really do have like have a Zach Morris phone. Yeah. Brick phone. What?
This is. Yo, this is so heavy. Like, why? I get the aesthetic, but yeah. Like, as a person trying to move around a place.
Also.
That's why I have a backpack.
Also, what happens when you go through, like, TSA? Are they just like,
no,
what's the huge metallic thing in your bag?
They don't even check my backpack. Like, you know, they only check your bag, like, for certain stuff. Like, say, like, recently I was flying back to the Bay because my friend got, like, sick, and I was, like, trying to fly immediately. And I had just got my hair done, so when I came back, because, you know, I drove back to L.A., I left my shampoo and conditioner in my bag. So that's the type of shit they stop you for. It's like, really? Fucking shampoo? Damn, take the shit. You keep it. I'll buy some more, like, type thing. Like,
so you haven't done the, what's the frequent, like, flyer sort of?
Yeah, the pre-check. The
pre-check, yeah. You haven't done that. Oh, that's upcoming. That's when you're like, that's when you really made it. When you do pre-check and you just roll through. Does YG have that? He's got it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I hate that. Like, it's like, fucking shampoo.
What's that?
Global entry.
Global entry? Oh, we're learning all types of stuff right now.
Oh, man.
Where you don't have to go through the passport line or whatever, you just swipe your card and go. It's a whole nother when you travel a lot internationally, so it's way better than TSA pre-check. It's like a whole nother level.
Yo, we are such suckers.
Losers standing in line.
We are not going to do that anymore.
Actually, you had like a weird TSA thing this trip, didn't you?
Yo, that's the craziest shit that ever happened to me in my life. So me and Fran are like a SFO, because we're flying like back to LA to get ready to come here.
Yeah.
So we like rushing. You know, I flew down to the Bay really quick to see my friend, because I literally flew in the Bay for like a couple hours, like, you know, because I knew I was coming here for a long time, so I just wanted to talk to him before I left. Then we flew back because I knew I had to be out here like at 7 in the morning. I had to be at the next flight. So we at the airport. And then he's like, yeah, excuse me, can you stop? I'm like, okay. She's like, okay. And she like pat my head because I had on my bonnet. Mm-hmm. She's like patting my head. Then like she just pulls out the thing and she's like, boo, boo. I'm like, is she scanning my fucking head? Then she like tests the damn bonnet for drugs. I'm like, yo, this shit is wild. I've never seen nothing like this in my life. Like, would you do this to an Islamic woman?
Yo.
I'm like, what are you doing?
That's crazy.
You should have been like, I read LA Reid's
like, yeah,
book.
I'm just tucking bundles of drugs in my braids and my bonnet. Like, girl, cut it out. Like, it's crazy. Like, what in the hell? That was, and I had no bag, so it was just, like, crazy to me, because I literally, like, just packed up and flew as I went. All I had was my backpack. So.
That's it.
And it's like, what are you, if I was going to smuggle some drugs, don't you think I would have a little bit more stuff to look not as noticeable? Like, what the hell?
You should have said that to them.
I was just looking like, yo, this is some racist shit. I just wanted to say, like, you know you should be ashamed.
You should see that person when you fly back, by the way.
Yeah.
No, I don't want to see that lady. Cause that
you know
what
you should have done?
What?
Shake them dreads.
Maya, thanks so much for coming through.
Thank you for having me.
I hope you have an easier flight back.
Too.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone, for listening to A Waste of Time with It's the Real. Please, go sign up on iTunes. Leave a nice comment for us. Go to soundcloud.com/waste of time. Say hello over there. Please, go tell a friend about our podcast. Jeff, which friend do you want to tell?
I want to tell two friends.
Two?
Yeah, I'm up in the ante this week.
Oh, man. Go ahead.
All right, so two people reached out to me on Snapchat this week, as people do.
Yeah.
One guy out of Boston.
Okay.
Who was jealous that he was not shouted out last week. Bobby Brown's son-in-law.
Bobby Brown's son-in-law. Shouts to him. His name?
His name is Eddie Ray.
Shout out to Eddie Ray.
And he's got his own podcast.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What's it called?
Okay, podcast name is Reviews from the 617. It's a play on Views from the 6.
Reviews
from the 617. He's from Boston.
From the 617.
Yeah.
Shout out to Eddie Ray.
Yeah, so the thing is, and I told him this, I don't really listen to podcasts.
Okay.
But I'm sure it's good.
Oh, you promise?
I don't promise, but I'm sure it's good.
Okay.
I'm sure ours is good.
Yes, that you can be sure of.
Yeah, and I also want to shout out So Proper.
So_proper.
Yeah.
Just like it sounds.
Yeah. Not just a clever name.
Right.
He hit us up and he was like, he was smoking to Kamaya on Snapchat, and I was like, oh, she's going to be on the podcast.
That's
and
cool.
So, yeah.
So shout out to him.
Shout out to
Eddie Ray and So Proper. Guys, go tell people about A Waste of Time with It's the Real. I'd like to tell two friends as well. Shout out to Nur Ozdemir just for being great in general.
Yes, our short Turkish friend.
Yes, who was just on a plane back from Turkey last night.
Short, beautiful Turkish friend, excuse me.
And shout out to our friend Abigail Weintraub, who we had breakfast with this morning, who came through and listened and hung out while we recorded with Fafu.
You know what's crazy? So we go to this restaurant called Good Enough to Eat.
Okay.
And it's like, Yeah, of course it is. Like anything that's good enough to eat, you will eat, I guess.
No, we have to have high standards. That's why people listen to A Waste of Time with the Real Guys. We'll see you again next week.